Welcome, all of you wine and true crime lovers. I'm your host, Brandy, and this is Texas Wine and True Crime. Thank you for being here, friends, for Season 3, Episode 16, The Lady Friend. I am rolling solo in this episode, so it's just me, you, and the wine. A huge shout out to all of you that support the show each and every week. We just appreciate it so very much. If you want to help keep the wine, food, and stories flowing, just go to our website, texaswineandtruecrime.com. Click on that Ko-fi link and you can contribute right there. Big thanks this week to Delma Alvarez, Julianne Gaudet, and Jennifer Cisneros. Thank you, ladies, so much for your support. And of course, if you enjoy the show, please head over to Apple or wherever you listen to our show. Click those 5 stars, say a few kind words, because it always helps. The wine for this week comes from our friends at the Infinite Monkey Theorem. Tonight, I am sipping on a Vignier. Orange blossoms, nectar, and tangerine come together with baked honey apricots and muted lemon. And of course, hang out until the end so you can hear my wine rating and review and learn more about our friends at the Infinite Monkey Theorem. All right, y'all, let's sip some wine and talk some crime. This week, we are discussing the case of Celeste Beard out of Austin, Texas. As always, I'm going to give you a few facts about the city our crime takes place in, so here we go. Number one, Austin is the capital of Texas and home to one of the top universities in the world, UT Austin. I'm sure a lot of you knew that. Number two, Austin is the only city in Texas that has a clothing optional beach. It's called Hippie Hollow, and it is clothing optional beach located right there on Lake Travis. Now, guys, I did not know this. And when I read this, I asked Chris, and Chris is like, I know all about that. Yeah, had no idea Hippie Hollow existed. I do want to check it out, though. Number three, Austin has the largest urban bat colony in North America. During spring and summer, about 1.5 million Mexican free-tailed bats migrate to Austin and emerge from under the Congress Avenue Bridge every night. Guys, it is a sight to see. So if you've never seen the bats, go check them out. On October 2nd, 1999, Stephen Beard was sleeping in a sprawling Austin home when someone walks into his room and shoots him with a shotgun. He is hit one time in the stomach. He manages to get to a phone and call 911. He tells the dispatcher, quote, I need an ambulance. My guts jumped out of my stomach. Hurry. What happened in the Beard home that night? Okay, y'all, we are coming up on the 22nd anniversary of this case. Stephen Beard is shot while sleeping in his bed. Now, he did not live alone in the home. His wife, Celeste Beard, and her two twin daughters also shared the home with Stephen. Now, Stephen and Celeste had only been married 4 years when he was shot. Stephen was born and raised in Dallas. After starting a family with his first wife, he decides to take the family and move to Austin. So guys, before he meets Celeste, he was married for 45 years to the same woman, but sadly, she lost her battle to cancer about 2 years before he meets Celeste. So let's talk about how these two even cross paths. So Stephen Beard was 70 years old when he meets his soon-to-be wife, Celeste Martinez. Now, Martinez is her last name from her previous marriage to a guy named Jimmy Martinez. Stephen and Celeste met at an Austin country club one afternoon in late 1994. So she's working at the country club as a waitress, and Stephen, being the retired millionaire that he is a member of this country club. Now, friends, Celeste is a whole lot younger than Stephen. There is almost a 40-year age difference between the two of them. But people say they got very close very quickly, and the two married not too long after meeting each other. So Celeste Johnson, Johnson is her name growing up, her maiden name. She was born in 1963. She was adopted and had other adopted siblings also in the household. She has said to have a rough childhood growing up. She claimed that she was abused as a child and that she had She basically attempted suicide when she hit puberty in hopes that the abuse would stop. And I sat there and I thought about this sentence, and you know, when you hit puberty, you can get pregnant and things, you know, it's just, it's so terribly sad that she was even having to deal with that. And at 17, she ends up getting pregnant during her first marriage and ended up having those twin girls. And those girls' names are Jennifer and Christina. So her fourth husband is going to be Stephen Beard. So she's about 32, 33 years old when she meets him, and she's already got three marriages under her belt at that time. She did have a history of using drugs, using alcohol. We'll talk about this later on in the episode. And y'all, her twins were in and out of foster care growing up since their mom had a very difficult time raising them on her own. So Stephen's kids, who were all grown, have lives of their own, they did not approve of their dad's marriage to Celeste. They believe she was only marrying their dad for his money. Now, I'm sure that you might be thinking what I was thinking when I was researching this case, and that is, what in the world does a 70-year-old man have in common with a 30-year-old woman, besides just being old enough to be her father? So, questionable. Stephen Beard made his mark by starting the first local Austin TV station, which I thought was so cool. He was rich, powerful, and he was really an important member of the Austin community. People really liked him. People loved working for him. After his wife died, he sold the station for millions and millions of dollars. So after she passes away, he decides, you know what, it's time for me to retire, you know, lay back a little bit. My kids are grown. So this guy raised a family, had been married to the same woman for 45 years until she sadly passed, and made millions just doing what he loved. Like I mentioned, he's just well-respected, lots of friends, and just was genuinely loved by a lot of people. And then he meets Celeste. So before the two were married, Celeste told Stephen, look, I'm a package deal. My twin daughters, you know, I have twins. They deserve to have a father figure, someone they can call dad. She wanted him to adopt her daughters as part of the union that they're creating. Stephen agrees to this because he's giving, he's loving, and y'all, based on my research, I believe Stephen wanted to give these girls a great life that they had never really had before. He knew they had been in and out of foster care growing up. He knew that there was a little bit of a jagged relationship between the kids and the mom. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And I think he genuinely loved them and cared for them. And the girls will even speak to this later on. So, you know, I really just think he had a big heart and he wanted them to have a good life. So, of course, he's rich and rightfully so. He should be protecting his assets. So he ends up getting a prenup with Celeste. So, guys, here's how the prenup pans out. Celeste will receive $500,000 immediately after tying the knot. Then she will get another $500,000 if they stay married for 3 years. But y'all, she blows through that $500K in 6 months. Now, I'm sure if any of us saw our newly minted spouse spend a $500,000 in 6 months, that's the wine talking. Oh, did I tell you there's wine with me, right? I have no Chris. I have wine. The radars, and I'm sure Stephen's radars were starting to go up here just a bit. That's quite an extensive amount of spending in a very short period of time. So not long into the marriage, Celeste started to show more of her truer colors to her new husband. She was not only just spending a whole lot of money. Guys, we're talking about $100,000 a month. Forget the $500,000 she blew through in 6 months. She's now starting to spend more and more, maxing out credit cards. He starts threatening to cancel the credit cards if she doesn't get this under control. So she starts partying again with her ex-husband. She would go over to his house. Her daughters would go with her. Now, her daughters at the time were about 16, 17, 18. A big 18th birthday party took place at her ex-husband's house. Stephen was not invited over. In fact, Stephen was never invited over to anything or anywhere Celeste was going with her friends. And people said that this woman talked so much shit about him to others, calling him names, just my rich guy and this, just, you know, clearly to people she was a user. So it was not at all a surprise when rumors start to spread about her continued affair with her ex-husband. So Stephen caught Celeste trying to steal some of his deceased wife's jewelry. Celeste was not only trying to steal the jewelry, but she was trying to get other items out of the safety deposit boxes that belonged to his deceased wife from the banks. So the banks would call Stephen, say she's here, she's trying to access this stuff. It became a huge problem. In fact, he was so upset by this, he told her he wanted a divorce. Celeste does not take this news well. That guy, you know, Stephen, this guy is her meal ticket. She claims that she's becoming depressed, she's becoming suicidal. And since Stephen is a decent human being, he decides to give the relationship another chance. Now, even though they get back together, Celeste decides, and Stephen did as well, it was a mutual agreement, they both decide she needs to go into a mental health facility and get some help. Get some help with the depression, get some help with the suicidal thoughts. So he's thinking, you know what, maybe this is what she needs. Maybe she just needs a little bit of help. And then when she comes out, and plus she has a spending problem. You know, and like I mentioned before, an alcohol problem before and a drug problem before. So she's got multiple things going on, from young, from when she was younger, that's growing into this. I mean, to go and spend this type of money, it's almost like you're not getting something fulfilled, right? You're trying to fill something in with spending. I don't know. But he thought, you know what, maybe if we get her a little bit of help, things will turn around. So they check Celeste into a rehab facility in Austin, and that's where she meets Tracy Tarleton. Tracy Tarleton had also checked herself into that same mental health facility to get help with alcoholism. So both women were suffering from depression and were there seeking help. Before meeting Celeste, Tracy had a relationship with a woman by the name of Zan Ray. But this relationship ended before she entered rehab. So Tracy had a drinking problem and Zan Ray was there to try to help her kick the habit. They end up actually getting into a relationship together. However, Tracy starts drinking again. She ends up in an altercation with someone else, not Zan Ray, with someone else. And that results in an assault charge. And because of that, the relationship is over. So now Tracy is in the mental health facility. You know, she's lost her significant other. She's depressed. She's an alcoholic. So Tracy and Celeste sort of latch onto each other and become very close. They both just end up checking in, checking out of this place. But they soon enough, they start sort of venturing back into their old ways. They're partying together. Celeste is just overheard talking about Stephen with Tracy, right? So I mentioned before, she already talked about him around other people and saying negative things, but now she's got this other girl to fuel that. So they're both talking about him. He's not invited to any of this stuff, as I mentioned before. So he's not really there to defend himself. Whatever she says, people tend to believe because, you know, they don't know Stephen. It's never been confirmed definitively, but it is assumed that there were romantic feelings going on between Tracy and Celeste. Now, Tracy is a self-proclaimed lesbian, and people that ran around with both of them had no doubt in their mind that they were having some sort of relationship. But it was quite evident that she is using this man for his money. But she also kind of wants to live the single life. So she likes the money. She likes the lifestyle. But he's 70 years old. This woman is in her 30s. She starts complaining about their sex life. She's telling people he can't fulfill her needs. So there's problems there. And this guy just hears none of this. Like, Steven is at home. He's hearing none of this. So, y'all, we come to find out she's actually putting sleeping pills in his food and his drink so she can go out and party after he crashes out. 7 months after Celeste and Tracy meet, someone breaks into the Beard home and shoots Steven Beard one time in the stomach. We know he is able to get to the phone. He tells the 911 dispatcher that his insides jumped out of his stomach and he sees them and he's holding them. And again, I paused when I read that and thought, I can't even imagine. How's this man even alive? But to see your intestines, ugh, it's terrible. I can't even imagine how afraid he must have been. Just laying in the dark, he's asleep, and all of a sudden this happens. He's immediately taken to a nearby hospital. Just being questioned, Celeste claims she was in another room. Now, we know she was home, but she was in another room when the shooting occurred. So there was, you know, there's like an east wing, a west wing. This is a mansion. She claims to sleep on the other side where her daughters are. So she claims she doesn't hear anything. She didn't hear the gunshot. The police are combing Steven's room and just the area of the shooting. And there they find one spent shotgun cartridge on the floor. After questioning the people in the house, Tracy Charlton's name comes up after asking who would want to hurt Steven. So they were talking to the daughters. They were talking to Celeste. They start talking to, you know, they want to know who would have done this. Tracy Charlton's name comes up pretty quickly into these conversations. The police were quick in their investigation to find the shooter. Once they established that link between Tracy and Celeste, they went to pay Tracy a visit and discovered that she was in possession of a shotgun. The shotgun even had her name on it. So once this gun is linked to the murder through the cartridge found at the crime scene, police knew they had found their shooter and arrested Tracy 6 days after the shooting. Tracy tells police that Steven Beard treated Celeste badly. She blamed him for trying to keep Celeste away from her and their continued friendship. I mean, this man probably knows what the hell is going on, right? It's right under his nose. He probably knows his wife is having some sort of relationship with this woman. They are constantly together. He's never invited anywhere they go. You know, he may even have an idea that he's being drugged. At this point, and he probably just wanted this woman away from his wife and away from his family. So there were instances when they were in rehab together that it was rumored Steven Beard had basically told the people at the facility that he would continue paying for it as long as they moved Celeste away from Tracy and put her in a different group. So he knew something was going on. Celeste and Tracy met in March of 1999. The shooting took place on October 2nd, 1999, and Tracy was arrested on October 8th. That's Chris's birthday. Sorry, that just came to mind. Now, Steven didn't die from the gunshot wound, you guys. He was actually on the mend and was sent home. So because of this, Tracy is looking at an attempted murder charge. But unfortunately, Steven died in a hospital on January 21st, 2000 from a blood clot, which was a result of the gunshot wound. So now Tracy is looking at a murder charge. She claims Celeste had nothing to do with the murder and that she acted on her own free will. And now it's time for a wine recess. Okay, y'all, so I'm drinking by myself and I'm sitting here thinking, I really am hungry, and I really wish I had food that Chris always pairs with the wine, but I don't right now, so I'm going to talk about this wine. So I'm drinking Vaugnier, 2019 Vaugnier, and I will tell you So Chris's voice is not really there, which is why he's not on here. So a little bit of a crackle voice right now. But we were talking about what we would pair with the Vanier, and we were saying dumplings and Asian salad would be good. We were thinking about putting some pineapple as well with it. So I can definitely taste the nectar, which I didn't know if I would catch on that, but I definitely taste the nectar in it. And if it for a real hot day in Texas, it's the perfect wine. So definitely, I'll tell you more about Infinite Monkey Theorem at the very end. But cool little concept they have right there in Austin. And there are cases from Austin, so matches up well. All right, guys, let's get back into the case. Months after Stephen's death, Celeste married her fifth husband. Okay, so after Stephen dies, she remarries. This is when Tracy decided to reveal everything to the police. This woman is sitting behind bars thinking Celeste was in love with her, wanted to be with her, and wanted Stephen out of the picture so they could be together. And now she has gone off and married another man. Now, not only that, she is getting money from Stephen's estate. So he redid his will and included Celeste and Celeste's two daughters in his will and in his estate, along with his other children. And she's still maintaining her same lifestyle. Her twin daughters, who are now over the age of 18 at the time of Stephen's death, decide to call their mother, and they're having these conversations with her, these very rough. Now, their relationship has always, I'm going to say from their eyes and the interviews that I saw with these two girls, their mother wasn't a mother. They feel like she never really raised them properly. They said their mother was very inappropriate. And they really tried to do everything opposite of what she did. So this isn't a normal, motherly, loving relationship. They basically said all she cared about was having husbands and money and really nothing about her kids. So she treated them, I think, kind of like they worked for her instead of like actually being their mom. So when they called her, they start having these conversations and they're getting so rough and weird that they decide to start recording them. So they actually decide to go to the police and tell them what they know about their mom and Stephen's relationship, about drugging of the food, about the lies, about the affairs, about her relationship with Tracy. I mean, they blow the whistle on their mother. So they claim she was a user and an abuser. You know, her girls got older, started to see right through this woman that they called mom, and they soon realized, you know, and they also knew Stephen loved them, and they loved him. And I think this was just the breaking point. They're now over the age of 18. They have a voice of their own. And, you know, they just started to realize that she doesn't care about us. All she cares about is herself and just using everyone for her own self-gratification. The police decide to cut Tracy a deal by promising her a reduced 20-year prison sentence if she testified against Celeste at her trial. So even after being arrested and charged with murder, Celeste maintained her innocence. She is arrested in March of 2002. So once on trial, Celeste pleads not guilty. However, the most conclusive piece of evidence was presented in the form of a voice clip that perfectly recorded Celeste speaking about how she was hiring a killer to take Tracy out. So she's going to have Tracy killed. Tracy testifies against Celeste at her trial, and this is what she tells the court. She tells the court, "I was in love with Celeste, and I thought she loved me too. She told me she loved me. There was a sexual relationship. There was an emotional relationship. So she agreed to help get Stephen out of the picture." Tracy said she walks into his room, pulls up the shotgun, takes one shot, and then turns around and walks out. She didn't even really know if she hit him or if she killed him. She says that she's just realized what she was doing. And once she just took that initial shot, her instinct was just to turn around and walk out. So Celeste's daughters also testify against their mother. And in turn, they're reaffirmed what Tracy said, that, you know, this is exactly what was going on between Tracy and my mom. Everyone knew it. We, you know, they were just way too close to just be friends. However, Celeste claimed that her daughters were lying and basically wanted her to go to jail so they would get a bigger inheritance from Stephen's estate. So I watched this part of the trial, and Celeste's lawyer gets these girls on the stand and basically blames them for making up these lies about their mom so they could get their hands on more money. I mean, there is absolutely no shame in this courtroom when it comes. Now, she's paying her attorney about $500,000 to represent her, by the way, coming from Stephen's estate. So there's just no shame. I mean, if it was the girls, you know, on the other side and they were paying someone, I'm sure the lawyer would have, you know, thrown Celeste under the bus. But she will go this far to throw her own kids under the bus when she's in the hot seat. In 2003, Celeste Beard was found guilty of capital murder and sentenced to life in prison with having to serve at least 40 years. Celeste Beard is now, so in 2006, she actually tried to appeal that conviction and claimed that the evidence presented in the original trial was inadequate for the guilty verdict, but there was no appeal. It didn't go well for her, no avail. Celeste Beard is incarcerated in Gatesville, Texas currently and will be eligible for parole in 2042. She still continues to maintain her innocence. Tracy Tarleton served almost 10 years of that 20-year sentence, and then she was released. It is rumored that she now resides in the San Antonio area. Friends, that concludes Season 3, Episode 16, The Lady Friend. If you want to see pictures related to this case, you can find them on our Instagram and Facebook pages. All right, guys, I'm going to go ahead and review this wine and cork it. So, like I said, perfect for a hot Texas day. We've had a few Vanniers on the show before, so always happy to try a new one. Wasn't familiar with Infinite Monkey Theorem. So let me tell you a little bit about them, but I'm going to go ahead and give this three corks for my friends at Infinite Monkey Theorem. So when they started this winery, they focused on the variables that they felt really mattered, right? Using the best grapes, harvesting them at their peak, nurturing just each batch, each batch of juice as it becomes the wine, and getting to know the people who drink it and talk over it. So they make their wine in an urban warehouses. So one is in River North Art District in Denver and on the east side of Austin. They source their grapes predominantly from the western slope of Colorado and the high plains of Texas. So guys, next time you're in Austin, go check out the Infinite Monkey Theorem and tell them your friends at Texas Wine and True Crime sent you. As you know, each week we always highlight an organization that just inspires us to be givers and just better people in general. And since this month is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, I want to share an organization that a friend and listener of the show suggested, and that is Alex's Lemonade Stand. So, Stacy, thank you for the recommendation. The organization was started because of a little girl named Alex that had been diagnosed with cancer and had a lemonade stand to raise money for research. Their motto, fighting childhood cancer one cup at a time. Can I just tell y'all how much I love that? I got a tear in my eye when I read that. In 2018, an estimated 15,590 children were diagnosed with cancer in the United States. And despite this, less than 4% of the federal government's total funding for cancer research is dedicated to childhood cancers each year. And this is why your support is so important. Guys, there are so many ways to donate your time, your money. They do different like sponsorships throughout the year. There's different ways. I mean, there's so many. I think there's like 10 different ways that you can be a part of this organization, part of, you know, whether you want to donate your time, your money. Please go check out our friends at Alex's Lemonade Stand. Cute website, just a great story. And for all those families out there that are dealing with this, our hearts are with you. And damn it, federal government, put some more money into the cancer research for children. It matters. Your donations actually fund the research that brings better treatment and cures to children with cancer. So that's what the money goes to. They do financial support. They do, you know, logistical, emotional support for the families that are dealing with children in the hospital and children going through treatment. So just so many cool things, guys, that they're doing. So please check them out. alexslemonade.org, alexslemonade.org to learn more. Well, thanks for being here, friends. Until next time, stay safe, have fun, and cheers to next time.